wish that this night would never be over. There's plenty of time to sleep when we die. So let's just stay awake until we grow older. If I had my way, we'd never close our eyes.
You've already captured me. Part 5 of the We Like to Get Our Kicks in This One Way verse. Written by Nebula. Read by Opalsong. Author's notes. This takes place the summer of 2015. It also has the conceit of assuming that the 2013 Stanley Cup Finals are Blackhawks Penguins, with the Blackhawks winning in a ridiculously high-scoring Game 7 in Chicago, and that Russian medaled at Sochi, with Geno scoring the GWD. Sydney's not sure whose idea it is to have a big female NHL banquet thing to celebrate 10 years in the NHL. And she's not sure whose idea it is to have it on the anniversary of her draft day. But it's all pretty stupid. It ends up being a big deal that Sammy Joe and Wick take over with the help of Mario. Because it's Mario, and that's what he does. Donna Kane and Debbie Bonhomme. They end up in Chicago because it's a nice central location, at some hotel, and families are invited, and plus ones are on the invitations. And Mario calls Sydney going, "Ask all the hockey players to be on their best behavior. We're obligated to invite Gary and Bill." And Sydney passes the news around and dreads it more and more and more. Mario and Ron are both going, and Pat and a couple of the other agents representing the women. And other than that, it's like 90 people of families and significant others and children. And there are a couple of speeches planned. Mario has promised Sydney it's not going to be celebrating her. She's gotten enough thank yous from women now playing in minor leagues, and the second pick last year actually thanked her in the first press conference as an NHL player, which Sydney wasn't even there and she blushed, and well, Sydney just wanted to play hockey, and that's what she's doing. She doesn't want to be the face of "You Can Play XX version." But just the day the first woman in the NHL was drafted, and she doesn't have to give a speech or anything. "Just," Mario began, and sighed. "Don't take this the wrong way, because if you were a guy, I'd be telling you the same thing. Bring a date, all right?" Vero is expecting kid number 2, and by expecting, she means the due date is that day. So Flower is out. Jordy is going with Heather, who are both going with Marcia in her enormous family crew. Johnny is going with Trish, to no one's surprise whatsoever. She goes through her team and former teammates, and half of them can't go, and the other half say, "You know, you should really take G." Which, fuck them, that's what she's trying to avoid. Initially, Benny says yes. "It's been a while since I've seen you," said. Until his wife surprises him with tickets to Hawaii, and, well, Sydney would cancel too. Maddie is meeting her secret girlfriend of over a year there, which means said girlfriend is probably related to somebody. Knowing the fellow ladies of the NHL and their families, Sydney's money is on one of Trish's sisters. But Johnny says Trish and her sisters share everything, and it's actually Marcia. And Frederica is taking her brother. Jordan is bringing, like, half the Oilers, because apparently the one in plus one stands for one team. Marcia is, as she frequently does, although Sydney is still unsure when they manage to become good friends, taking Martin St. Louis and a pair of 6-inch heels. The goal is always to see how much taller she can seem than him. Last year, they came to awards with Marcia in a pair of shoes Sydney is pretty sure she borrowed from Lady Gaga, and Martin was barefoot. Claude Giraud, who was unfortunately standing next to her at the time for some heart nominee bullshit, leaned over and said, "They'll have beautiful children." "Come on," Stamkos said from Sydney's other side. "There's no way they can successfully have sex. It's like a chihuahua trying to impregnate a Great Dane." "Admittedly," Sydney had said, "she's only like 183 barefoot." At first, she asked around, trying to get dates with people taller than her, but Chera and Thornton both said no, and Seguin texted her saying he wasn't that much shorter than her, and then she gave up and decided to take the shortest person she could find. "That," Claude said, a mixture of healthy rivalry, hatred, and respect in his eyes, "is exactly the sort of thing Marcia would do. Basically." Which leaves Sydney with Gino, which, well, would have been Sydney's first choice anyway in a perfect world. But date! And Mario means real date. And it's Gino. And Mario knows Sydney. And so if she didn't bring a silly fuck you Mario date, well, Gino would know exactly what it meant. It's sad when your married mentor knows you're on a real date and your date doesn't have a clue. She ends up asking Gino anyway, because, well, there's no one else. And Gino's training in Pittsburgh this summer anyway, because his parents came over with a new puppy for his birthday, an Irish wolfhound Gino named Louise, then just stuck around. Gino says yes, of course, and invites his parents to Chicago with them, because they've never been, although they decline going to the banquet. And he says, while they're training the day after she asks him, "Really excited, Sid. Glad you asked." And grins at her, and okay, so maybe she's excited too. She doesn't spend as much time with him as she used to. It'll be good to hang with him again. "Also because you're stupid in love with him. Jesus!" Maddie says over the phone when Sydney is whining to her about it. "Yeah, well," Sydney says, "I'm just, like, fuck my biological clock. Can't I be married to a hockey or something and die a virgin like that one goddess who hunted a lot?" "You are not," Maddie says. "Well, no," Sydney says. "But the point still stands." "You're sending mixed messages to me here," Maddie says. "You want to be venerated as Diana, the hockey goddess, but you don't want to be celebrated for being the first chick drafted on the 10th anniversary of your draft date?" "Venerate me all you want. I just want to be dead or retired first." "Probably dead." Sydney is looking through dress ideas her mother sent her. "Of course, this is a black tie thing." "What are you wearing?" "Gabe and Stats and I went shopping. It was fun. Expect Twitter pictures soon. Gabe tried on dresses too, and Stats found pantsuits."
"PR isn't gonna kill you for that?"
"They probably will," Maddie says. "But I have a rocking dress. You should take people and stuff."
"Profound," Sydney says,
but calls all the pens she knows are in Pittsburgh anyway, and makes them go with her to a dress shop Vero recommended. They end up with her mom on speakerphone for 3 hours, while, like, 7 guys, and Gino's mom, bring her dresses, and she finally finds something that everyone likes. It's actually kind of pretty. Black satin, a dress with one shoulder, but the strap is wide and high-necked, bringing attention to her face and not her broad shoulders. Though she comforts herself knowing that everyone else has to find a dress in the same way. It has an A-line skirt with pleats in it, which slims out her hips, and the back comes down low. Natalia, zipping her up, is gushing in Russian in her ear, and between that and Sydney looking at herself in the mirror, she knows it's the best choice out of all of them. She goes out to show the boys, and while usually they all wolf whistle and tease her, there's this moment of pause. It's happened a couple times before. A couple of other dresses that looked good. But this is definitely the best dress. Beau then gushes like a teenage boy. You just look so pretty, Sid. And then it passes. And the wolf whistles start, and the teasing starts, and Sydney grins and twirls a little when Tanger asks her to. Gino isn't teasing, though. He's been pretty quiet for the whole thing. But right now, he's looking at Sydney.
What? She says.
Just, Gino says slowly,
look happy in this one. Like, having fun.
I am, actually, Sydney says. And grins. Thanks for coming with me. Natalia has sent Sydney's mom a picture, and she says, oh, Sid, it's perfect! So they buy the fucking dress. Then Gino says,
not have to get new tie or vest. Awesome.
And then elbows her.
Thanks for black, Sid.
Ha ha, Sid says, your corsage better be fucking awesome, though.
Sid, Paul says, you know this means you have to do jewelry, too.
Mom's gonna figure that out, Sydney says breezily, and hopes it's true.
Shoes?
Nielsi asks, and Natalia suddenly starts chattering in Russian.
Mama say we get shoes now, Gino says, or else you not come back.
She's pretty right, to be honest. And shoe shopping is just as ridiculous as dress shopping. Maybe worse. Nielsi and Sydney happen to have the same shoe size, because Nielsi has tiny feet, and Sydney's are bigger than average. So he insists on trying on every pair Sydney rejects. They settle on 3-inch pumps, cream with black heels, and Natalia pokes Gino in the chest and says thickly, new shirt. Must get.
Your shirt's white, Brooksy agrees. It'll clash with Sydney's shoes.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Sydney says. Do you have them in white, too? She asks the clerk.
No, we like the cream, Craig says. It's better with your complexion.
Gino's a millionaire. He can get a cream shirt. Cream looks fine on him. White makes you look washed out. Do you all sit around and watch What Not to Wear in your rooms now that you don't have roommates? Sydney demands. Seriously?
What's What Not to Wear? Tanger asks.
Sydney shakes her head.
If it comes naturally, it's even worse.
Gino patted her shoulder.
It okay, Sid. I get new shirt. And corsage. Big party. You never dress up.
I dress up for the awards, Sydney says, almost whining.
Same dress, every year, Gino says archly.
Which is not true. She just has a style she likes and sticks with it. Sometimes she wears teal instead of blue.
Don't go if you don't have to.
Sydney just flips him off and goes to pay for her fucking shoes. Good shoes, Natalia says, following her. I like. Boys like. Zenya likes. Gino has translated enough of his mother's comments for Sydney to know she thinks it's a fucking shame that someone hasn't snapped up Sydney yet. She's 27 years old, 28 in August, and she's not married, not dating. She's never really dated anyone since she dated Jack in high school, and they broke up before they went to Combine. Because that was a bad idea. After that, well, a few guys, discreet, from bars or friends of friends, a few puck bunnies who weren't too picky about gender, or maybe just girl hockey fans? Sydney knows there's a difference, but she's still trying to figure out how to tell after the game in a bar when tipsy. Sydney doesn't know what Natalia would think about Sydney snapping up Gino. Gino, who hasn't dated Oksana in almost 2 years. And anyway, Oksana was like Sydney's polar opposite. Not that Natalia disapproved of Oksana. Apparently, that was just a press rumor. But it's one thing for your best friend's mother to think you're a catch, and another for her to think you're a catch for her son. I'm going to die in them, Sydney tells Natalia, slowly enough that Natalia can understand, who just laughs. She pays for the shoes. Who pays $600 for fucking dress shoes anyway? Seriously, it's not like they're skates or something and you wear them 7 hours a day until they fall apart and then you go buy new ones. Sydney doesn't understand people. And calls her mom. So, she says hopefully, I have a black satin dress and cream pumps. Do you have any jewelry that matches? Not unless you want to look like you're from the 80s, sweetheart, her mother says, and Sydney almost throws her phone. But Gino snatches it out of her hand while she's winding up, while everyone collapses in laughter behind her. Fuck her life! Seriously. She already hates this fucking party, and it's still a month away. In the end, she, Natalia, Taylor, and her mom go out to get jewelry for her when her parents and Taylor meet her in Chicago, a few days before the banquet. Sydney traveled with Gino and his parents, who had never been to Chicago, and the Lemieux, so she invites Natalia to go shopping with them, which is either a great idea or a terrible one. She can't decide. Taylor's excited, mostly because Sydney has to buy jewelry that's... Well, the only jewelry she's ever regularly worn are her 87 necklace, thin gold chain and small pendant in the hollow of her throat, and a pair of tiny hoop earrings she takes out for games and practices. Bracelets and rings are inconvenient for hockey, and anklets even more so. Do I really need this shit? Sydney asks, and her mom cuffs her lightly on the shoulder. Language, Sid, she says. And you need at least some sort of purse or something. They're at a fancy department store on the Magnificent Mile, in the accessories section. Sydney finds the first black satin purse she sees, little, but big enough for her phone and ID and credit card, with a little satin cord for a strap, and says, Here, this will work. It's satin and everything. No one can find anything wrong with it, but Taylor still can't stop laughing at her, and Natalia and her mother just sigh. She ends up with a bracelet and a matching set of earrings, gold, because, sorry, she's not taking off her necklace for a stupid party. Natalia tuts and shakes her head and says, Silver better. But her mom observes her face and says, Well, she'll be all right with the right makeup. Oh, God, makeup. The horror must show on her face, because her mother laughs and says, Don't worry, I'll help. Actually, we have appointments at a salon. Remember how you missed prom? Taylor says gleefully. So much that it was on national TV and they made a commercial out of it? Shut up, Sydney says. And Taylor, little sister that she is, doesn't listen. This is what prom would have been. At the time, Sydney'd felt a little bad about missing prom, but the Central Scouting Bureau had just released their rankings, and she was first, so she hadn't felt that bad. Wow, she says to Taylor, I just discovered I don't regret missing it at all. Taylor just laughs, and Sydney resists the urge to thunk her head against the wall. Look pretty, Natalia offers. Xenia date, right? Oh. Sydney let her head drop gently onto the glass counter, her nose smushing against the surface. The assistant makes a horrified sound, and Sydney mutters, Fuck, to the earrings and pendants below her. Behind her, her mom is saying something to Taylor, and Natalia is just laughing, fond and sweet and shit. Because, yeah. Okay, so maybe she wants to look nice for Gino, which means that suddenly she really cares about her makeup looking nice and her earrings matching her complexion. Sydney doesn't like caring about lost causes at all. They're all staying in the same hotel, which is where the banquet's being held. but it's a big hotel, and really fucking fancy. They stay in nice hotels on the road, but not nice like this, where they give you a bathrobe in the room that is made of the softest terry cloth Sydney's ever felt, and has a hood and drags on the floor. And she's pretty tall for a girl, seriously. And the day before the banquet, after working out with everyone at the UC, she showered and then just lounged around in the bathrobe, hood up, because, wow, clothes were stupid if she had this all the time. Anyway, it's a nice fucking hotel, and after they work out in the morning, Gino stops to get coffee in the little shop in the lobby and says, "Pick up at 7? And Sydney gets this nervous feeling in the pit of her stomach and says, "Yeah, okay." Gino waits for a minute, then prompts, "Room number?" "Oh, 1787, she says, because she made the reservations. 17's not a great number, but at least she has the 87 she requested to even it out. It means her parents and Taylor are on the other side of the floor, though. Gino's mouth is lifting into a smile, and so she tells him, "Shut up." "Not saying anything, Sid," he says, but his grin keeps widening. "See you then." She goes to her mom's room in the afternoon, and she and Taylor and her mom all head off to a hair salon to get their hair done. The manicure and pedicure feel pretty nice, but Sydney's ready to be out of there about halfway through her updo. "You have beautiful hair," the hairdresser says as she runs her fingers through Sydney's freshly conditioned curls. "How do all the girl hockey players manage to have great hair?" Sydney blinks at her in the mirror, surprised. "You know who I am?" This is a high-end place with, like, classy fashion magazines of pouty women with no boobs wearing incredibly bizarre clothes, and all of the hairdressers looked like they stepped out of Vogue. "I live in Chicago," the hairdresser says. "Born and raised, Lifetime's Hawks fan, even when they couldn't fill the seats. Got a lot of respect for girls like you and Trish Kane. Your hair's nicer, though. So dark." The ends are lightening a little from the summer, but it's still almost black. The hairdresser smiles. "Had center ice tickets for the 2013 Stanley Cup final." Sydney winces a little. "Come on, Sid," Taylor says from the next seat over. "You had a fucking 8-point night. Game 7. Yeah, the Hawks won the game, but you caught the snitch, or, you know, the Conn Smythe, whatever. It would be so much cooler if the Conn Smythe was a snitch." Sydney snorts, and the hairdresser devolves into laughter, shoulders shaking so hard she has to put a hand on the back of the seat to steady herself, and Sydney thinks that the afternoon might not be a total wash. They get done with her hair and makeup and shit at 6, and Sydney stops at the florist's to get the boutonniere she ordered for Gino before she gets sent back to her room to get dressed, with Taylor's help so she doesn't fuck up her makeup. "Why don't you need help?" Sydney almost whines, and Taylor grins. "I'm not a lost cause, sis," Taylor tells her, and claps her on the shoulder. "Fucking deal. Anyway, you look hot. Gino's totally gonna want to jump your bones." Sydney can feel herself blush, and she shoves Taylor out the door, her little sister cackling the whole time. Fuck everyone. She still has, like, 30 minutes before Gino picks her up, so she kicks her heels back off and opens up her Kindle and starts reading something mindless. Some mystery Flower had recommended, and then Craig had seconded. Simple enough for someone who had English as a second language to read. Cerebral enough for a Harvard grad to enjoy. Clearly, right where it made you think, but not too hard. She gets pretty involved. She so rarely just gets a chance to read. Maybe she should do it more often or something. When there's a knock at her door. When she glances up the clock, it's 7, and so, fuck! She's actually nervous. She sets down her Kindle with shaky fingers and wipes her palms on the bedspread. She checks herself in the mirror, Her hair still looks good. She needs a little more lipstick. They picked a light color, one that wasn't too noticeable if she licked it off. Grabs her clutch and the boutonniere from the fridge, slips into her shoes, and opens the door. This is what prom must feel like, she thinks. Gino does, in fact, have a cream shirt, the exact color of her shoes, under his vest and jacket. He has a little plastic box in one hand, and he's grinning when she throws open the door. And then his smile drops. Hi, Sydney says. She's blushing again.
Sid, Gino says. And then, look beautiful.
She thought she was blushing before.
Thanks, I guess,
she manages. And Gino smiles at her.
Serious, Sid,
he says, most of his composure back, but still a little shy.
Look really good.
He holds out the box.
Got you corsage.
Sydney has never, ever received a corsage in her life, and she almost wants to cry. Instead, she sets down the purse on the little table in the foyer of her room and opens up the box holding the boutonniere. Gino follows her lead, and she pins the arrangement to his jacket and smooths the lapels. Gino takes her wrist and slides the corsage on. He's so gentle, contrasting with the calluses on his fingers, and the corsage is cool from the fridge against her skin. When it's settled, she looks up at him, and there's a strange, tender look on his face, the slightest of smiles. This is the worst idea ever, Sydney thinks, a little miserably, and picks up her purse. Ready? Gino holds out his fist, and she grins, and they do their handshake, knocking the foreheads together lightly. He slaps her ass as she walks out the door and shuts it behind him, then offers her his arm.
Let's go, he says,
and they head out to the elevators. Sydney glances at herself in one of the mirrors in the hall as she passes, straightens her shoulders. She does look good. She remembers Manon's advice before her first NHL awards, advice that she'd spurned then, but suddenly wishes she hadn't. On the ice, you've got your pads, your jersey, your helmet. They're your armor. What do you have off ice? Just confidence. Sometimes it helps to look really good, to wear an amazing dress or tall heels or do your hair fancy, because it makes you more confident. We live in a boy's world. Sometimes confidence is all you got. Why the fuck did Manon have to get everything right after all? At the party, Sydney immediately sees Maddie, and Gino says,
I go find alcohol.
Maddie looks great in her dress, picked out with the help of her own teammates. Although, objectively, it looks sort of slutty. That's not true. If Trish were wearing it, it would look slutty. Instead, it just looks classily sexy.
Hey, Sydney says.
Hey! Maddie says and turns around. Wow, holy shit, Sid. You look hot. Sydney immediately feels her face get warm. Maddie looks good. Her hair sort of short from evening out her playoff mohawk, and has it curled around her face like a 30s movie star. But she actually knows what the fuck she's doing with herself, and doesn't feel sort of weird in her own skin.
Thanks, Sydney says awkwardly. You look amazing, too.
I don't know how I pull off this dress, Maddie says, examining herself. I saw it, and Stats was like, ooh, that one. And I was like, it's totally slutty. I can't possibly. But then I put it on, and it worked? It's true. She has on a strapless dress with a slit up to mid-thigh and a little train. It's dark blue, and Maddie has matching eyeshadow and dark red lipstick.
Well, it works for you, Sydney says. Just don't give it to Trish, who can make a moo-moo look trashy. Do we get to meet your girlfriend tonight?
Maddie shrugs. She's obviously nervous. Well, we decided to, but... Okay, seriously. Which Kane is it? Maddie sighs. Jessica, okay? It's Jessica, and Kaner is going to murder me. A, Johnny owes her $100. B, she knew it! Speak of the devil, Sydney says, seeing Trish and Johnny come in. Immediately, Trish sees them and drags Johnny over by the elbow. We have news, Trish says breathlessly, grinning. She is wearing a dress that is, for once, not slutty. But in return, her makeup looks like she looked at Kesha's music videos and made a mashup of her makeup. And her hair is... well, there's glitter in it. She's got her arm wrapped around Johnny's left elbow, which is tucked into his suit pocket. Hello to you too, Maddie says. Where's your family? Around, Trish says breezily, waving her free arm. But no, our news is the best, and you need to hear it now. I want to tell you first. Are you sure you don't want to tell your parents first? Johnny asks. Everyone's going to find out tonight anyway, Trish says. So what the fuck ever. Show them! Show them! Show them! Johnny pulls his hand out of his pocket. On his left ring finger is Trish's Stanley Cup ring from 2010. It's been significantly resized, and Sydney can see Trish's name on the side. Does... Maddie begins, and Trish grabs Johnny's hand and thrusts it out at them. We are getting married! She shrieks, and throws her arms around Johnny and kisses him. Johnny pulls away, his right hand on Trish's hip. He says, yes. Your cup ring? Sydney asks. Seriously? It was the blingiest thing I knew of, Trish said. Of course I proposed with it. Trish proposed? Maddie says, lifting an eyebrow. Got on one knee and everything, Johnny says, but a dull red is spreading across his face. And then I blew him when he said yes, Trish says, and Johnny hip-checks her. Maddie sighs, and Sydney just puts her face in her hands. Congratulations, Maddie says sincerely. Have you made any plans? I don't know yet, Trish says. She can't stop grinning. It only happened, like, 2 hours ago. She moves in and hugs Sydney, and then throws her arms around and pulls Maddie in. Congratulations, Sydney says, and she starts to grin, too, just because Trish is exuding happiness. I'm glad you're happy. I'm totally fucking happy, Trish says, and squeezes more tightly. Sydney looks up at Johnny, who has that fond look he gets whenever he looks at Trish being ridiculous. He looks like he's going to melt into the ground, a big puddle of warm, blingy goo. She mouths, are you happy? Johnny blinks at her, then nods so hard he might get whiplash. The dopey smile widens, and Sydney just smiles and shakes her head. There, Maddie says, and detaches herself from Trish. I'm gonna go say hi to your fam, she says to Trish, then makes her way over to the Canes across the room. By the way, she says to Johnny, you owe me $100. She jerks her head at Maddie, and Johnny's eyes narrow. Gino comes back and hands Sydney a glass of Moscato. Sipping at his own champagne, he asks, what I miss? Kaner screaming. Johnny holds out his hand, and Gino's face splits open into an enormous grin. Getting married? Congratulations! Trish hugs Gino around the neck. Thanks! I proposed today! Gino laughs and gently removes Trish. You would propose. Johnny rolls his eyes. She wanted it to be dramatic or whatever. So, Sydney says, obviously you can't wear your fiancé's cup ring all the time. Do you have an engagement ring or something? Oh! Trish reaches into her clutch and pulls out a little velvet bag. Here, Johnny! Johnny looks at her confusedly, but dutifully opens the bag and shakes its contents into his hand. Inside, there are two rings, one much smaller than the other. Silver. I had them custom made, Trish says, looking a little shy. They're kind of lame, but... She stops when Johnny laughs aloud, picking up the bigger of the rings. Look, he says, and Sydney and Gino lean in to see that the band is a little hockey stick, engravings in the metal to match up to a stick, the blade and the knob welded together to form the circle of the ring. When Sydney examines it a little more closely, she sees that it's the stick model Trish uses, the engravings carving out Bauer near the top and Vapor near the blade. It's even taped the way Trish tapes her stick, backwards from everyone else. From more than a foot or two away, it's just a silver ring. You have mine and I have yours, Trish says, and she's blushing. The cup ring was just silly, but if I were to give it to anyone, it would be you, so I did. Johnny kisses her, and when he pulls away, he says, Your feelings are showing. Put on your goddamn ring. Trish smiles up at him gratefully and takes it out of his hand, slimming it onto her left ring finger. Wow. Fuck. Sydney is so fucking jealous all of a sudden. How do those two jokers have it together when she doesn't? Out of the corner of her eye, she sees Jordan come in, her hair in an incredibly complex updo that shows off the lines of her neck and the fact that her hair is 4 feet long. She's got Taylor Hall on one arm and Ryan Nugent Hopkins on the other. And it appears that no other Oilers have joined her. Thank God. Sydney waves, and they make their way over to her, Gino, Johnny, and Trish. Hey, guys, Jordan says. Looking good, Ebby. Shouldn't Nuge be in the middle? Trish says, being center and all. I get to be in the middle for fucking once, and don't you whine about it, Jordan says. She detaches from Hall and Nugent Hopkins to punch Trish in the arm. I have news, Trish says, and then, wait. What's Dutchie doing with my sis? Oh my God! Sydney turns around, and Jessica Kane has dipped Maddie in a dramatic 1940s movie kiss, Maddie kicking one foot into the air. When they come back up, Maddie's lipstick is smeared everywhere, and Jessica leans in and whispers something to her that makes Maddie's shoulders shudder, while Jessica wipes away lipstick with her thumb. Johnny glances at Sydney, and then grudgingly pulls out his wallet and hands over 520s. Sydney sticks them in her purse and grins at him. She did not, Trish says, and moves towards them. But Johnny grasps her left hand and thrusts the ring in Jordan's face and says, We're getting married. Well, someday we are. Soon. Like, maybe in a year? And Trish suddenly stops freaking out for now, and instead gets happy again about that. Not that anyone has any doubt that they'll be fallout later. Let's go talk to Mario, Sydney says, rolling her eyes. Gino is hiding laughter. The rest of the night is pretty uneventful, for Sydney at least. Apparently, almost everyone decides that this is a great night for breaking news. Wick announces she's pregnant again, and thus is retiring for good. Jordan starts talking about her mysterious boyfriend again, and when someone asks, she says, We're still keeping it a secret, sorry. Bettman arrives, and Sydney manages to say hello to him and thank him for his assistance with the whole draft thing without punching him in the face, or dick. Before Gino comes over and informs her that Maddie wants to introduce her properly to Jessica. He says, Hello, Gary. Good to see you. As shortly, ha ha, as he possibly can, and drags Sydney away. Looking murder, he tells her. Bettman moves on to Trish and Johnny, who are being physically restrained by Mario, chatting between them, one arm over each shoulder. It's probably for the best. The speeches are short and boring. there are a couple of interviews with Penn's TV and TSN. Trish officially announces her and Johnny's engagement to Blackhawk's TV. Miko Koivu tests every drink heavily pregnant Tessa gets before she can try it, just to make sure it's not alcoholic. And Maddie and Jessica kissing is all over the internet in about 30 minutes. Overall, there are a lot of other people who the press want to talk to, and Sydney's just fine with that. It's a little after midnight, and the party is starting to wind down, when Mario nods at her from across the room, and she sighs in relief.
What? Gino asks.
We can go now. Let's go, she says, and grabs his arm and drags him out, then stops. Unless you don't want to? His lips quirk.
No, ready to go. Little too much champagne.
You had like 12 glasses. No shit, dumbass. Sydney heads out of the banquet hall, pauses to say goodbye to Manon, who smiles at her, kisses her on the cheek, and says, Didn't I tell you, Sid? And honestly, she could be referring to anything, Sid thinks, from the whole dress makes you awesome advice Sydney never took, to the way Sydney's hand had clenched around hers at the draft 10 years ago, just before Mario and Craig Patrick had stood up, making their way up to the podium, and she had said, It's going to be fine, Sid. And then it was, and it was amazing. It's still amazing, and there's the whole world in front of her. And down to the elevators.
What floor is your room on?
17th, same as you.
Awesome, Sydney says. She pulls her phone out of her clutch and checks it. Mario forbade her, but he wasn't checking his either, and neither was Gino. Flower's been mass texting everyone updates on Vero, who's in labor, and this whole team is way too invested in that fetus. Jesus! Now, checking them chronologically, she can watch his text go from semi-coherent to French that devolves into key smatching, and then, from an hour ago, Michael Sidney Fleury, born July 30th, 2015, at 10:46 p.m.
Named him after you, Sid, Gino says, nudging her.
Yeah, they asked me to be the godmother, Sidney says. Flower said they were going to give their baby the middle name Sidney, no matter what gender it ended up being.
Asked me to be godfather, Gino says, sounding a little surprised.
Sidney knows exactly what Flower would really like to be saying with that, and hopes that Gino is not quite up enough on the culture to understand, because it's fucking humiliating, and it's not like Flower asked the two of them because he's trying to be a matchmaker. He's not that fucking stupid, even if his job is to block little pieces of rubber going 90 miles an hour with his body. He thinks they'll be good godparents, although Sydney's not sure how that will work.
What happens when you retire? You'll go back to Russia, yeah? Long-distance godparent?
Gino shrugs and looks vague. Sydney grasps his suit jacket.
You won't?
Gino shrugs again.
Don't know. Love Pittsburgh a lot. Magnitka, not very healthy place, you know. Lots of people sick. Mama and Papa spending more time here because air is so bad. And Moscow...
He wrinkles his nose.
Friends in Moscow, yes. But is big city. Maybe too big. And everyone know me. Like you, in Canada. Maybe summer's in Russia. Winter's here?
Does Flower know this? Gino nods.
Thought you knew, Sid.
The elevator doors open, and Sydney reaches into her purse to find her key. Gino's digging in his wallet for his.
I missed it, I guess, Sydney says, and glances down the hall. Nice party, Gino says, changing the subject suddenly. Looked pretty.
Sydney glances at him.
The ballroom?
Gino cuffs her slightly on the head.
No, stupid. You.
He catches one of the bobby pins holding up her hair, and a few curls fall down. And then Sydney can't take it, and hands Gino her key and points to her door while she pulls the pins out of her hair. Shit, how many are there? She kicks off the shoes as soon as she's in the room, walking carefully so she doesn't trip on her dress, dropping the bobby pins on the counter in front of the mirror, and yanking the others out. It takes her a while. There are at least 30 pins in her hair. This has to be wasteful or something. But when she's finished, and her hair is its usual mess of waves around her head and down her back, only worse because it's been hairsprayed and shit, and she turns around, Gino is staring at her like he's just scored the game-winning goal in the Olympics all over again to end Russia's medal drought. "What?" Sydney says, and blushes again. And then Gino shakes his head. His eyes don't leave her face, her hair. "You are beautiful," Gino says. "You know, you are beautiful." "I..." Sydney says, and has to resist the urge to look back in the mirror. Her hair is ridiculous. Her lips are too big, her proportions all wrong for a girl, and... And then Gino takes one step forward and kisses her, cupping her face in his big hands, sliding them to tangle in her fingers, mouth opening over hers. She kisses him back immediately, because Gino, kissing her... Because he rubs his thumbs across her temple like it's something precious, and her hands are wrinkling his shirt, and Gino is walking her back to the counter, and they break apart so Sydney can push herself up onto it, and then Gino is kissing her harder now that he doesn't have to bend down. Still gentle, but firm, his hands still on her face, just kissing her. And she hasn't kissed anyone since she looked at Gino up on the stage of the 2012 NHL Awards through her TV and knew, just knew, that there wasn't anyone but this person. This one person who had perfect hockey and a perfect smile and humbly accepted every award he was ever given and knew, somehow, exactly when she needed cheering up, and exactly when she needed chirping, and exactly when she needed to just sit with someone quietly, and who had combed her hair when she was concussed because holding her hands above her shoulders made her dizzy. "Gino," she says into his mouth, her toes brushing against the satin of her dress, his wool tuxedo pants. He pulls back a little, but presses a kiss to the corner of her mouth, her cheekbone, her jaw, instead. "Gino," she says again. "Hmm?" he says, and the sound vibrates against her throat, and she shudders. "Gino, what? Don't think I'm going to be pretty all the time. I..." He kisses her again, slow and thorough and lots of tongue. Gino kisses a lot of girls like this, she thinks dizzily. And then he pulls away. "I love you," Gino says. "And what?" "Best, when your cheeks and ears red, and hair everywhere, and smiling because we won game. When we score, you or me, and you yell, 'Fucking awesome,' in my ear when we celly. That, when I love you best."
You love me?
"But even if I love you best then, I never see you like this." Gino kisses the corner of her mouth again. She realizes her hands are still clenched in his cream shirt. The shirt he bought for her. Special, you understand?
"You love me," Sydney says. Another kiss, this one to the corner of her eye.
"I love Sid for a long time," Gino says. He looks nervous, shy, just not as nervous or shy as she'd be, as she is.
"Why didn't you say anything?" Sydney demands. It hits her all at once, and she grabs Gino's shoulders, pushing him back. "Why say something now?"
"Tired of never saying anything. Tired of not being able to touch you." He strokes Sydney's face.
We friends, so long I figure. If no, we still be friends. But if yes...
It's so easy for you, Sydney says. It's so easy for you to say that.
She bites her lip, and Gino sucks in a breath and kisses her again, pushing her back a little with the force of it. He keeps stroking his thumbs over her cheekbones, twisting strands of her hair in his fingers.
Is love, of course, is easy, Gino says, pulling away.
His lips are spit slick and red, and she wants to bite them.
You try?
He looks at her uncertainly. But she can say this. She can say this and mean it, because it's true.
I love you, she says.
And when he's right, he's right. It really is easy. Gino's smile is beatific.
Told you, he says,
and leans in to kiss her again. The next morning, Maddie sends her link to Puck Daddy. Of course, Wish managed to fiangle his way in there. God damn it. But it could have been worse. It could have been Deadspin. The article is titled, She Went Down at NHL's Banquet, celebrating the 10th anniversary of Sidney Crosby's draft date. Here's what you need to know. And lists all of the shit that did, in fact, go down. Sidney is on her side, Gino wrapped around her like a giant octopus, his head resting on her shoulder. They didn't fuck or anything, but neither did Sidney get dressed after Gino unzipped her dress to run his hands up and down her back. And they'd made out in the bed for a long time, Gino in his dress pants and undershirt, and then shirtless. She'd ended up crashing in nothing but panties, Gino's arm around her waist, his hand cupping her breast now, and he's breathing slow and steady against her back. When she woke up, she felt safe and secure and warm, and had just reached for her phone on the nightstand, not bothering to dislodge herself. She sighs and opens up the article. 1. Maddie Duchene and Jessica Kane, dating. Duchene's only the third active NHL player to come out as homosexual. Link to NHL player is first athlete in a major American sport to come out as gay. Or according to Dutchie, just because I'm dating a girl doesn't mean I don't like boys too. But she definitely wins for dramatic effect. We here at Puck Daddy have no doubt that this is going to be an interesting conversation, so we'll just leave the photo of the kiss that hit the internet and a clip of Maddie's interview with Aves TV and ready yourself for a totally separate article on the subject. 2. Patricia Kane and Jonathan Taves, engaged. Unsurprisingly, Kane proposed with her first Stanley Cup ring she had resized for Taves' finger. Surprisingly, the rings she had made for them when Taves isn't wearing 8 carats of diamonds, because that's just nonsensible, are oddly sweet. Each is a silver replica of their respective hockey sticks, with Kane wearing Taves and vice versa. Don't worry, everyone. She still left the party wasted, and Taves ended up dragging her out because she was getting explicit about their sex life. You didn't miss out on much. 3. We got the official height difference of this party from Marcia Stahl and Martin St. Louis. Last night, she was 8.5 inches taller than he was, still not breaking the record of 13 inches set at last summer's NHL Awards. But truly impressive nonetheless. I'll give them the award of Best Dressed Couple, but the Best Dressed Individual awarded to... 4. Hands down, Sidney Crosby. I'm not sure anyone was expecting that out of the girl who has her jeans hand-tailored and still spends most of her time in t-shirts and sweatpants. But she looked fantastic. We've included a few pictures for your viewing pleasure. It's pretty obvious she's keeping up her rigorous summer training schedule. Those of you who are so inclined, while you can't see her thighs, please appreciate the fact that she can probably crush your head between them and you die happy. 5. This event was organized by the NHL in order to celebrate the draft day of the first woman in the league,
see above. Unsurprisingly, a lot of big names in the league from that era were invited. Most infamously, Gary Bettman. He gave a speech that received even more half-hearted applause than his legendary Hall of Fame speech during the most recent lockout, and made the rounds like a good retired commissioner should. Some lovely photographer took pictures of every current or former NHL player present speaking with him, and then proceeded to put them up on the internet in a slideshow. Link. We've included our favorites below, but check out the whole gallery. But Mario Lemieux, aggressively holding both Kane and Taves back while keeping the most forced smile possible on his face, is maybe the best thing to come out of the whole night. 6. Haley Wickenheiser is pregnant again. She has officially retired. 7. Who on earth is Jordan Eberle dating? She talks about her boyfriend in interviews, but never drops a name. Link to Jordan Eberle reveals she has a boyfriend, but won't tell anyone his name. Our best answer? The entire team of the Edmonton Oilers and 30% of the Western Conference. 8. Tessa Bonhomme is also pregnant. That baby needs to be born, like, yesterday. 9. Here's another picture of Sidney Crosby looking perfect, because holy crap. And 10. While this was going on, Marc-Andre Fleury's second child was born, apparently healthy. Congrats, Flower. Let the summer of hockey babies. Link to this summer, 45 separate NHL players are expecting babies. Conspiracy theorists, go! Continue. Maddie's note is, you looked so hot you made the news! And Sydney texts back, ha ha, you get a whole separate article. Have fun with that. Told you, you look beautiful. Gino says it into her shoulder, lips moving slow across her skin. Sydney starts, and Gino's arms wrap more tightly around her. He's got a leg thrown over her hips, and he drags her back closer to him. I didn't know you were up, she says, and then adds, you're a fucking octopus. For a moment, she feels self-conscious, but Gino's seen her naked a few hundred times before, and last night he'd looked at her like she was something wondrous and amazing. Yes, Gino says, humming happily into her skin. Morning, Sid. Sydney's phone vibrates. In hiding from Trish, actually, right now, staying alive is my number one priority. Over her shoulder, Gino laughs, and the presses of his mouth turn into long, open-mouthed kisses along her neck. Sydney texts back, good luck, and drops her phone, because that feels really nice. His thumb brushes against her nipple, and she arches into it, exhaling hard. You like? Gino says into her ear, and Sydney nods. Yeah, she says, a little shaky. It's been a long time since anyone's touched her, and no one's ever been so, so loving, like she was the only thing in the world worth thinking about. But then she rolls onto her back, so Gino's leaning in over her. He's smiling his big, goofy smile he gets after scoring a goal or when he's asked a question that surprises him into laughter, and it's the hottest thing she's seen in her entire life. This is better, though, she tells him, and pulls him down to kiss him, morning breath and all. The end. If you enjoyed this story, please leave feedback for both myself and for the author. You can find this story at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. and from there you can find a link to the author's post. Thanks for listening! Never.
This night.